Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet, online and on KBIA. I'm Ruben Stern. As China continues its rise as a leading economic power, there's been continuing interest in expanding exports from American companies, not just nationally, but at the state level. For example, last fall, Missouri Governor Jay Nixon signed a trade deal that is expected to increase Missouri's sales to China by about a third, generating a total of $4.6 billion in income through 2014. That's good news for many Missouri exporters, but it also raises some questions. What are the costs and benefits of this type of a deal? What does it take for a Missouri business to tap into this growing market? And are there other things that need to be done to support Missouri businesses overseas? Today, we take a deeper look at Missouri's China connection. Joining me in the studio first, Tony Clayton is the president of Clayton Agri-Marketing. His company, based in Jefferson City, exports hogs and horses to China and livestock to other places as well. Welcome to our program, Tony Clayton.
Hey, Ruben. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you with us today. Also with us in the studio, Wen Ouyang is the co-director of the Confucius Institute, which works to educate and strengthen cultural and business ties with China. It's based here at the University of Missouri with connection to China as well. Welcome to our program, Wen Ouyang.
Hello. Good to see you.
Glad to have you here with us. We also have with us in the studio Handy Williamson. He's the Vice Provost of International Programs at MU. Welcome back to our program, Handy Williamson.
Good to be back, Ruby.
Glad to have you with us today. We also have on the phone another guest. Rosemary Gallant is the Principal Commercial Officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. In that role, she's responsible for promoting trade and commercial affairs in the Beijing Consular District. Welcome to our program, Rosemary Gallant.
Thank you very much.
Glad to have you with us today by phone. We hope that those of you in our audience will join our program as well. Have you or someone you know done business in China or perhaps elsewhere overseas? If so, we'd love to hear about that experience. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And again, the time to call in is Monday afternoon between 2 and 3. And let's start with this question. Tony, I want to start with you. How did you get started exporting livestock to China?
We have been in business since 1996, and that's what we've always specialized in. And we recognize China, you know, as a growing economy, growing population, and their number one protein source is pork. And they have a lot of needs for better quality pork and efficiency, so that we targeted a large market.
And what did it take to get into a country like that?
Well, with any market, especially within the Asian culture, that from our experience, that we have to travel there for maybe 2, maybe 3 years to develop that market and to lay the groundwork. You'll participate in trade fairs, meet producers, certain people as far as it might serve as agents or representatives, because you can't be everywhere at one time. So there's a lot of groundwork that goes into develop that market.
Right. And Rosemary, how does that compare with what other companies have to do in order to get into the Chinese market?
That's a very standard approach and a very successful one. To take time. It's good to find qualified agents. The Commerce Department for the International Trade Administration can help with a lot of aspects of that. We have 2 offices in Missouri and 5 offices in China, so it's a good network to tap into as well.
And were there things that were big stumbling blocks for you, Tony, as you attempted to go there? I mean, you had been in other countries before, right?
Right. Finding that good local representative or agent is always a challenge, regardless of what country it is, because the first thing that they'll approach you is they want the exclusive agreement, and they want to cover all of China. And when you look at the map and you look at the number of people involved, you know, it's not really possible as far as to have one representative to represent you in all 4 corners of China. So that's something. And then the health protocols that we deal with and the regulations that we deal with for live animals, you know, because we have a time-sensitive product. once we start the process, we cannot have delays. So we have quite a process of paperwork, of permits, permission, and how we get our animals delivered there. So it's quite a process.
Well, let's talk about what you do a little bit. I'm a little fascinated by this. I mean, we talk about, you know, airlines seeming like cattle cars these days, and you actually are loading planes with livestock, right?
Yeah, in 2011, we actually flew a shipment of pigs from Chicago every 11 days. You know, we deal in 44 different countries. We not only besides pigs, we do cattle, hogs, horses, sheep, goats. Right now, the only products that are allowed from the United States to China would be breeding swine and horses. So once we start a process, it takes us approximately 65 days from once we start the process to get the animals delivered to China. And then once they arrive in China, they have another 45 days of quarantine under the Chinese government supervision. So it's a lengthy process because many times our clients from China will come here and personally select the animals one by one. We will go to farms in Minnesota, Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, Illinois, Indiana, and personally select each animal one at a time. Once that selection process is done, all of those farms have to start a specific schedule of blood testing. And the Chinese spend more money on blood testing than any other country in the world. And it's a 60-day process. Plus, they send a government veterinarian here to work in our office for those 60 days to supervise our work during this process.
That sounds pretty complicated compared to, you know, we're suddenly going to be able to export.
Right. And then once we start that process of blood testing, and then we transport these animals to a quarantine center near Chicago O'Hare Airport. They go under final inspection by USDA. We transport them into the airport. We put them into crates that have spacing that's regulated by USDA. Water on board. And they travel a lot better than I do in certain airlines in economy class.
Okay. Real fast, I want to remind everyone that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today, we're talking about Missouri's growing economic ties to China. Joining me in the studio are Tony Clayton, whose Jefferson City-based company exports livestock around the world, Wen Uyang, co-director of the Confucius Institute at the University of Missouri, Handy Williamson, the Vice Provost of International Programs at MU, and on the phone we have Rosemary Gallant, Principal Commercial Officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. For those of you in our audience, how important do you think it is for Missouri to continue increasing exports to China? Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA. And online at kbia.org. You can be part of the conversation online at that time, or you can watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Well, I want to ask you about China a little bit. You know, when Americans go over there, what are some of the things that they get wrong?
Well, people always think American people do not have real American food. Their food imitate Italian food or European style food. So once they say American food, they always think about McDonald's and KFC.
And what about in a business context? I mean, if someone were going to try to do business in China, what would they need to know about Chinese people or Chinese culture in order to succeed?
Yes, because compared with the Eastern countries, Asian countries, for Western country people to do business, they always follow some regulations, laws, rules, and they think the business will go. However, if you want to do business and want to have successful business with Asian countries, especially with Chinese people, so you need to build the trust relationship first. So probably you go to have a dinner with him or her first. And then after that, started to talk about business. If you first time meet, directly go to the topic about how to deal business, it won't work.
Right, Handy, do you have anything to add to that in terms of making inroads in a country like China for an American business?
Yes, I do. I think I can start off talking about the University of Missouri's relationships in China. And as I understand it, the basis for a good business transaction starts off with good relationships, as Dr. Young has said. University of Missouri has a foundation of relationships in China that date way, way back a long time ago, and we call them legacy relationships. And they fortunately undergird our successful attempts to make partnership arrangements with the universities in China, also with provincial governments in China.
Right. Rosemary, I want to ask you about this. You know, if a business were trying to get into China, how would they establish some of these relationships if they didn't have the kind of legacy relationships that Handy just described?
Well, that's something that we work on a lot. We do customized services, for example, we call Gold Key Service, where we'll set up screened appointments for a company with qualified agents or representatives. And it gives a lot of credibility to a smaller, new-to-market company because it's done through the approach of the U.S. consulate of Shanghai or Guangzhou or the U.S. embassy. So we can secure pretty good meetings for the company. And then, of course, it's up to them how the relationship develops. But that's a good way if they haven't come out before and don't have established network. And we can also, we have a partnership with a Chinese organization, CCPIT, to help us deliver that kind of service in 14 other cities. Because, of course, China's very broad, and the target market might not be in one of the cities that our consulate or embassy is in. So that's one of our most successful programs. We can also help by evaluating, say, a company met somebody at a trade show, whether in the U.S. or in China, and they want to know, who is this person? What is this company? And we can help them do due diligence on what is the background. Is this a company that's reputable that you would want to have as your agent or representative?
Mm-hmm. You mentioned due diligence. What exactly does that entail?
Well, we try to get financial information. It's a little more restricted now. Chinese law has just cut back on the availability of the financial information. But we can check things like how are they are registered within the Chinese system? Are they registered for, and what is their, is their business registered to do the type of business that you're looking for? So, if they're in an entirely different industry, that may be a signal that's not good representative. We check their reputation in terms of, is there any lawsuits against them? Are there any legal actions against them? We try to get references from other companies that they have dealt with, and check their online reputation as well.
Right. Tony, when you, over the course of your doing business in China, what sort of things have you found that surprised you?
Well, the bureaucracy of getting things pushed through in a timely manner. As far as the American culture, we ask for something maybe from our government or permission, and we're updated maybe, and we can push a little bit. From the Chinese side, our customers cannot push their government to get things streamlined, especially in the ways of permits. As an example, if we export pigs to a new farm, they can build new facilities, and they can use that facility for a quarantine. And once our animals arrive in China, they have to be quarantined a minimum of 45 days. So they can use that farm as a quarantine, but there's three levels of inspection. There's a local quarantine, there's a province quarantine, and there's a national quarantine. And all three agencies have to inspect. Sometimes that can take several months, even a couple of years, to get that process done, where our patients may wear a little thin if we had to go through that here. Really big on things of rubber stamps. Everything's got to have a stamp on to be official. And some things that we kind of take for granted as we work through several levels of government agencies within China.
And how does that affect your profitability, I guess, in terms of the expenses to what you're able to charge for the products that you're sending over there? That seems like a lot of additional work beyond what a typical American enterprise might have to do.
Well, example, we've had three charters this year where we've chartered the whole 747 aircraft. When we start that process, we know the amount of weight that plane can lift, and you cannot tell pigs to stop growing. And so, that's a process. When we pull that first tube of blood from an animal to start the blood testing requirements, the clock is running. When we do the official quarantine testing, which is the last 30 days, we've got 30 days to get that process done. And no delays. We've got a plane contracted for. It's going to leave on a specific day. And that plane's going to leave whether it's got one animal on it or 1,100 animals on it. So that's the thing that influences and affects our profitability, our expenses, because what we do is not cheap. And the animals that we export there are the great-grandparent animals of animals that will be used for food. They're the great-grandparents of the slaughter animals. So, they've got a couple of generations of development.
And what happens if everything doesn't fall into place? So if the pigs gain too much weight, for example, or if the paperwork doesn't come through and you've only got one approved pig for takeoff, what happens in a case like that?
You'd make the decision of how you're going to live up to your contract. Now, we do. Pigs will outgrow our plan at times. We have to leave a few of them behind at the farm of origin. Very rarely we short ship. We'll be really close, knock on wood. But sometimes farms can run into a health testing problem. And we've had some problems here since the market reopened. You have to remember that our export industry to China was closed for 23 months due to the H1N1 so-called swine flu virus that started in May of 2010 and ran all the way through March of 2011. We were banned from exporting. So, those things kind of come into play, and we have some lost in translation terminology that the Chinese don't understand. When we blood test here, we have positive results, we have negative results, we can have incomplete results where the laboratory cannot say it's positive or negative. Sometimes the supervising veterinarians from China that are here, they see that word incomplete, they only think positive. So they'll ban a farm from participating in our shipment. So we've run into that a couple of times since the markets reopened.
Interesting. Rosemary, I wonder, are there similar issues in other industries besides the transport of live animals? I mean, this sounds pretty complicated. Are all industries affected by these kinds of complicated regulations?
I think he's dealing with one of the most complex, but certainly I know in other areas in healthcare, in many electronics, there are different regulations that they need. They need to get the CCC mark, which is for machinery and a lot of electrical equipment. So China has its own standards that it needs. So the company needs to know what type of testing needs to be done, what are the standards that need to be met, and in many cases the testing must be done in China, obviously not for the animals in his case, but for equipment or other material. So sometimes a small shipment has to be made and then tested in China. And, of course, there are duties and other things to consider, but I think he's probably dealing in one of the most complex.
Rosemary, perhaps you could give us an example of a recent company that you dealt with and talk about their successes or the challenges that they faced.
Let's see. We are dealing with a small, China is very interested in energy conservation. This is a high priority for them to conserve energy. And so so we've dealt with a couple of small energy-conserving materials. Actually, another one is a building material that low water usage urinals, for example, was used in, we helped them get into Beijing Airport and other major installations like airports and train stations. Because it's such a, saving water is important. They have a tremendous water shortage in most where the heavily densely populated areas. For the energy conservation one, we took them on a trade mission, for example, to Xi'an in western China, where there was a lot of interest in they're building new, China's urbanizing rapidly, so a lot of population shifting into urban areas. And many of the cities want to be known as green or eco cities programs. So getting smaller companies introduced to programs like that is something that we've had some success with.
Right. Let me remind everyone quickly, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about Missouri's growing economic ties to China. Joining me in the studio are Tony Clayton, whose Jefferson City-based company exports livestock around the world, Wen Uyong, co-director of the Confucius Institute at the University of Missouri, Andy Williamson, Vice Provost of International Programs at MU, and on the phone, Rosemary Gallant, Principal Commercial Officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. For those of you in our audience, what challenges do you see in increasing Missouri's exports to places like China? Share your ideas. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Rosemary, I want to just ask a little bit more about those examples. In terms of, you know, when you say you were able to get these companies in on these construction projects like the company that makes low-water toilets, what does it take to get an American company a contract like that?
It takes a lot of perseverance and, you know, an investment of time and money for the company, which is obviously difficult for small, very small companies. But we, for example, in the airport, I believe we set them up with a meeting with one of the airport construction companies, and it helped to validate sort of a less known or new to market company that we were, you know, promoting them in this fashion. But obviously then they had to demonstrate, and so once they had a key project, I think in building materials and things like that, it's important to sometimes they may not make any money on the first sale, but getting some product in country so that people know, okay, it's being used, it's used in a Chinese city or a Chinese project, and that can be very key. So whatever the product, for example, another company I dealt with that does electronic health records, they similarly had to do a demonstration project in a portion of a city to gain credibility and experience in China and then have those results to share and show that, yes, this helped that city in making a more efficient healthcare program. So investing somehow in your first project, I think, is very critical.
Right, and how is that different from other countries? Is it similar, or does it? Is there a special thing in China in terms of that demonstration project that you mentioned?
I think many countries, you know, appreciate that. They need to be able to see and touch it. But I think because China is so large and there's a lot of, I think gaining credibility there seems to be even more important. Other countries know that, you know, it's a small market, that they've got to take what's out there on the market, but you may have to make modifications for China. And if you're going to have any presence in the market, you know, that may be worthwhile in the long run.
Right. Now, Handy, you were with the entourage from Missouri that went last fall when the governor signed those deals, right?
Yes.
And what happened during that trip? What did you see in terms of things that would enable success in the future for Missouri businesses?
Part of what we saw evolved around the special symposium that was conducted involving the Missouri farmers and the representative of the associations. And there was quite a bit of information presented by the U.S. Embassy on trade with China, covering the major products that China receives from the United States, showing the growth in those over time. They also discussed conditions in a polite way, because we were trying to educate, to a certain extent, the individuals who were expecting to do trade in the future. And I suspect that apart from those settings, the delegation had experience in interacting with the Chinese host in social settings, especially in meal settings, and I'm certain that they had unique experiences realizing that they have been watched at all times in terms of how they behave and how they embrace the Chinese culture vis-a-vis how they embrace the food that were offered. And then also, to some extent, sometimes the table manners become quite important.
And so table manners could determine whether a business will succeed and be able to get opportunities?
They would determine pretty much the foundation of your relationship. Remember, as Nguyen has said earlier, the Chinese require that relationship be built first and that you have a basis of trust, and then you go on to the business side.
Interesting. In terms of that trip and your takeaways from it, what sort of opportunities do you see for Missouri businesses?
I think that the opportunities continue to be good for businesses like, for example, Emerson Electronics, who exports a large volume of product to China, as well as for Peabody Company that has a major contract now to mine coal in the minority province of China, and also a huge project in Inner Mongolia where they are involved in mining near-surface coal that's clean-burning coal, and also demonstrating processes for reclaiming mined land and bringing the Inner Mongolian and Mongolian grassland back to the original state.
Did you see other opportunities that Missouri businesses are not yet taking advantage of?
Well, that requires some thought. We did visit with the Missouri Trade Office and talked about the delegations that were coming in from Missouri. And I suspect that in the area of economic development, we visited the Ocean University there in a city that is emerging. It's one of those huge newly built cities where the emphasis is on business, for example. And I suspect that our companies here in Missouri that are in the process of producing and manufacturing beer and other beverage will likely have opportunities there. I know that city is the home of China's most popular beer, and it is called Qingdao beer. And any businessman who's gone there will probably have had some Qingdao beer during the meals.
The Laoshan district in Qingdao also is the sister city of Columbia. So the Missouri Bluegrass Band went to there to attend the Qingdao International Beer Festival. It's very fascinating activity, and those people went there and they thought that's the very good memory for the rest of their life.
Interesting.
Let me add, in terms of the University of Missouri, keep in mind we are talking about relationships being the foundation, and our faculty have strong relationships with their PhD students who have returned home, and many of them have risen to positions of prominence in the government and in business. And so that affinity between those known quantities can be transferred to the government or to business deals. And from that perspective, MU has a wealth of foundational relationship that might be focused on to help gain entree on the part of emerging businesses that want to get involved.
And have you seen anyone start tapping that yet?
Yes, I have. As a matter of fact, if you look closely at our College of Engineering, many of our faculty, for example, in computer science and other areas, or persons from China who may have received their degrees at Missouri or another U.S. university, and they are instrumental in linking the faculty who have innovations back to provinces in China that are willing to establish laboratories or willing to get involved in joint ventures with the university.
Okay.
And there are others that you're well aware of. But
yeah, I've got to stop us right there. Yeah. We're going to take a quick break. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about Missouri's growing economic ties to China. Joining me in the studio are Tony Clayton, whose Jefferson City-based company exports livestock around the world, Wen Uyang, co-director of the Confucius Institute, Andy Williamson, vice provost of international programs at MU, and Rosemary Gallant of the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. We'll be back after a short break. Stick around. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about Missouri's growing economic ties to China. Joining me in the studio are Tony Clayton, who runs a Jefferson City-based company that exports livestock to China and elsewhere in the world, Wen Uyang, co-director of the Confucius Institute at the University of Missouri, Handy Williamson, vice provost of international programs at MU, and on the phone we have Rosemary Gallant, the principal commercial officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. For those of you in our audience, have you or someone you know done business in China or perhaps elsewhere overseas? If so, we'd love to hear about that experience. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Rosemary, I want to come back to you. You know, Handy was talking about the University of Missouri's ties with folks in China. There have been a lot of students from China coming to MU. That number seems to be increasing every year. How does that set up the state of Missouri from your vantage point to have more exports going over there?
I think it's an excellent tool and connection to build off of. There are now about 160,000 Chinese students in America, and having them there in Missouri, giving them exposure to local companies, local products, and making the connections, and they can bring them back to China or give them advice on how to proceed with China is part, you know, perfectly legitimate tool to use. And I know one of the things that we remind our exporters is, you know, you're, as a seller, you've got to provide information in Chinese to make your goods or service understandable to the local market. And I don't know if the university, I imagine with the number of the Chinese professors and things that they have, may be able to offer assistance in that, and that can also be helpful for the companies.
Well, that gets directly at what the Confucius Institute does, right?
Yes, sort of. And we can say the University of Missouri improved the reputation of Missouri in China. Because before I came to the U.S., came to the University of Missouri to study, people surrounding me, they don't know. Even they don't know the state's name, Missouri. They don't know where Missouri is. And I say the University of Missouri, Columbia, they always associate the university, Columbia University in New York. And then I explained there where is Missouri and where is St. Louis, Kansas City, and the home of Edgar Snow, who used to study at the School of Journalism here. And I explained how Lewis and Clark to started their Western journey from St. Louis. And then they started to know, oh, this is Missouri. So if like we graduated from here, our faculty worked at the University of Missouri, when they go back, they will talk about those Missouri things. Like my mom watched Missouri weather forecast every day. So they know, my parents and all people know, oh, we have a tornado, we have a drought, and the cost, the price, influence on corn, peas, and so on, a lot of things. That means the University of Missouri really, really important for the improvement of the future business relationship between China and Missouri State.
Right. Now, you mentioned Edgar Snow as a famous American in China. I suspect a lot of Americans have no idea who that is.
Yes, and Edgar Snow, who was born in Kansas City, and Dr. Williamson and I visited his house, his school, and also his archive, which the archive was located at UMKC, because the founder of the UMKC School of Medicine was also the founder of the U.S. Edgar Snow Memorial Foundation. They are good friends. Right. They were good friends.
And how famous is he in China, and why?
Because he went to China around 1924, that's almost 8 years ago, and he was the first journalist to report China, Chinese people, and the Chinese Communist Party to the Western world. especially during the World War II, he was the first U.S. International journalist to report how Chinese people fight against Japanese soldiers occupy the Chinese territory at that time. He was also the friend of Chairman Mao and Primary Zhou Enlai, and he wrote a famous book, Red Star Over China. So I heard about that when Nixon, former President Nixon, visited China. Reagan, former U.S. President Reagan, Clinton, several U.S. presidents visited China. They read this book first to get to know China, Chinese leaders.
And just how famous is he? Like, how many people out of 10, if I said Edgar Snow came from Missouri in China, would say, oh, Missouri, excellent?
They know Edgar Snow, but they do not really know Edgar Snow from Missouri. It's not like Chinese people know Mark Twain from Hannibal, that famous. So Edgar Snow is very famous in China, and we also use Edgar Snow's name to name the highest journalism reward for the Chinese journalist. That's the only reward in China we use international people's name.
Handy, I want to ask you this. How does a legacy like that, somebody from Missouri who became famous in China, how much does that translate to potential business success in China for Missouri companies?
Very good question. It gets back to relationships and affinity. We have been reading about Edgar Snow, and my experience, as we discuss him with the older generation, they get very excited about his contributions, and they remember. They are decision makers, and consequently, they transfer Edgar Snow's contribution to the Chinese people, transfer it to relationships for Mizzou today. I think what we are doing in many countries is looking back at the legacy relationships and in establishing a sense of appreciation among ourselves and having the presence of mind to mention those and discuss them while we are there. I know we got to meet many, many members of the Chinese society who were former diplomats here in the United States, and they have hosted us there and also assisted us in becoming members of the Edgar Snow Foundation Board at Peking University. I would say that it is very important, more important than you would think, because Edgar Snow, for example, allows us to establish a face in China that is long. And you know, in China, face is very important, face and presence. So when we talk about the long history of involvement in China, and we talk about MU School of Journalism being instrumental in establishing the first schools of journalism in China, that is huge. One of the things that strikes me is that, imagine Edgar Snow being in China during a very interesting time and having the audacity to write about the people at a time when they really struggled to get themselves known beyond the bamboo curtain. The same as anyone trying to get their message through. And I think because of that, the Chinese people are extremely grateful for the risks that he took and what he did and the sacrifices he made to make China become known to the Western world, and more importantly, the Chinese people, make them become known to the Western world.
Tony, I wonder, in going about the business that you do there, how much do you reference the fact that you're based in Missouri as opposed to just talking about the fact that you make available agricultural products from across the Midwest in the U.S.?
I do reference where I'm from, because it's important to logistically of how our animals move and, you know, the environment we're from and how our animals adapt when they go into certain climates. So if they're sourcing... it doesn't really apply to China with cattle, or, you know, if they're from Missouri, you know, in environment, hot weather, altitude, and those type of things, just from logistically. But we reference it, and I want to know where we're based out of and where we operate and how it relates to how far we are from Chicago and New York. And because when they send veterinarians here, we start our discussions, and they'll come in sometimes and they say, okay, we're going to go to this farm in Indiana. Well, you remember, I'm in Missouri. We're 9 hours by car to this farm. We're 8 hours from this farm to Nebraska. We don't go to all those places in one day. We can't even fly there in one day. So, you know, we do reference that.
And how far up the ladder do you have to go? Like when I meet people in Los Angeles and they say, where are you from in Missouri? I say between St. Louis and Kansas City, and they get that. They kind of have a frame of reference there. Do you have to go all the way up to, I'm between Los Angeles and New York, or can you say near Chicago, or can you say near St. Louis? Like,
no,
what kind of response
do
you get?
Kansas City and St. Louis is, the world has gotten a little smaller to people than when I started, you know, back in the early 90s.
Right. And how do they respond when you bring up the Missouri part? I mean, is it kind of still at that stage where people have no idea, or is there some recognition at this point?
Oh, they get a little
means?
Closer to us all the time. You know, they'll know Chicago and say, okay, you're the next state over from Illinois, and, you know, it's kind of a process by elimination at times.
Okay. Rosemary, I wanted to ask you about this a little bit from your vantage point. What does Missouri need to do to differentiate itself from other states as this becomes more of a, you know, each state is trying to promote itself over there?
Well, I think Missouri now has two offices in China, which is great. I believe they're in Beijing and Shanghai, so you've got excellent coverage. And I think it's really down to the company level to take advantage of, you know, the export assistance centers, the Commerce Department offices in the state, and that work closely with also the State of Missouri Economic Development offices to get them started overseas. I think it helps to have a state with some history, but ultimately, it's really down to what the company does to go over, establish the relationships, and have the right products and services that meet a need over there. I think it does help initially to have something, you know, over your banquet or, you know, shared lunch and things like that, and toasting to show some understanding of the local culture, understand that Edgar Snow came from Missouri, so you have a long understanding of China. It can help in the very initial stage, but ultimately it's really, you know, what are the products and services and how welcome they are, how suitable they are for China's needs.
Right. You mentioned, you know, environmental products earlier. Are there other sort of industries that you see that Missouri might have opportunities in?
Yeah, I think in biotech, and I know we've talked obviously on the animal health products more extensively, but biotech in general is a pillar industry in China that's getting a lot of Chinese government support. Aviation, I understand that Missouri has some aircraft parts and other aviation-related companies. That's a very fast-growing area. China's general aviation market, you know, for like anything other than the major commercial airplanes is just beginning to open up because they have very restricted airspace. So things related to corporate jets and other smaller aircraft is going to find a lot of interest. Anything related to airport development, the rail sector. We often don't think of the rail sector from the U.S. being competitive, but we are extremely competitive in heavy rail and cargo transport rail, not in the high-speed passenger rail. Obviously, that's more Chinese strength, but companies related to that. We also just, for example, recently did a seminar on elder care, and with China's growing aging population, there was a lot of interest in engineers and architectures who have experience in special facilities and things for the elderly population. So just things you might not think of offhand can find a good market if it's, you know, if it suits the Chinese need.
Right. What about agriculture? Because that's something our governor has said, you know, is an opportunity there, and it's a major industry in this state.
Yeah, that's a huge market. I think that China is now the number one market for U.S. Soybeans, U.S. cotton, a lot of major U.S. agricultural commodities, they're also the Department of Agriculture, together with the U.S. Trade Representative, is working hard to negotiate opening of other things like the beef market and other areas that will help increase our agricultural exports.
Right. And do you have a sense of how Missouri compares to other places, other states in the country? You mentioned that Missouri has two offices over there. Is that a lot? Is that a little?
That's a lot. Yeah. I think I think about 30 states have, 25 to 30 states have representatives in China. So, you know, you're in the top half, and then having two, that's very good. And I know that the state has received grants from the Small Business Administration to help expand exports. I think that's part of how that's supporting the presence of the second office, but also can be used for companies to participate in trade missions. Things help to defray some of the costs. So I think there's a very good platform.
Mm-hmm. Handy Williamson.
Yes. I'd like to point out that according to the Federal Reserve Bank's recent studies, the state of Missouri's trade with China has advanced more rapidly than the other neighboring states over the recent years, and it's anticipated that the pork market, the other white meat, is positioned to expand quite rapidly. As long as we have the supply and as long as we can meet the phytosanitary conditions. And I believe that the market is unlimited. One other area that we might want to mention that's important to Missouri is the area of financial planning, insurance, and asset management. As the middle class grows in China, it is anticipated that they will require some of the same kind of mechanisms we use in the United States, those that would be offered by companies like Edward Jones and A.G. Edwards. I believe A.G. Edwards is probably merged now, but it was originally from Missouri. Now, we have faculty at the University of Missouri who are working with institutions there to develop finance and financial planning curricula. And so we're getting in on the ground floor, helping to develop products. And you can imagine that once they are available, since Missourians helped to develop those products, they might have more affinity for using those offered by Missouri companies.
Okay. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about Missouri's China connection. Joining me in the studio are Tony Clayton, who runs a Jefferson City-based company that exports livestock around the world. We have Wen Uyang, director of the Confucius Institute at the University of Missouri, Handy Williamson, Vice Provost of International Programs at MU, and on the phone we have Rosemary Gallant, Principal Commercial Officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. For those of you in our audience, we still have a few minutes left. If you have comments or stories to share, we'd love to hear from you. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Handy, you mentioned the potential for pork to become a major industry that would be open to American producers. What Tony mentioned earlier, that there was a ban on pork imports for a while back in 2010. What happens in a case like that? I mean, if we're investing in a lot of industries, hoping that that's going to keep Missouri's economy rolling, and then it's an uncertain industry like that where something could potentially get in the way. Tony, maybe you could talk a little bit about what did happen and how smart it is to rely on that as the way the economics are going to drive.
Well, it sent a little bit of a shockwave through our industry, but we have some farms that we work with around the country that developed joint ventures because of that. So they set up American buildings, American genetics, producing American swine in China that have a registration paper as American-made product, but it's being produced in China. So some companies that we work with went right on marketing U.S. swine, but it was produced in China. So it's changed our business model a little bit. And because of some other changes in the global supply of grain efficiency, the Chinese have really come around the last two or three years of really wanting more technology and coming to the business table to make this a real efficient business. So it's changed our model a little bit.
And that's a good example of a partnership or a relationship that has facilitated the outcomes that we desire. I think when you think about the pork industry, you might want to look to the east at a big operation like Smithfield Farms. I believe they export the largest share of pork to China. And in this case, we're talking about pork meat, not live animals. And there is a difference. Again, the idea of affinity relationships is important. Let me go back to another example that relates to students and faculty. That it happens in China and it happened in Africa that I'm very familiar with. When people are here studying agriculture on the farm, their research projects, and they are doing research in the labs, they do pay attention to the equipment that has been used to do the analysis. They also pay attention to the equipment that is being used to till the soil in the fields. And some of the prior examples is that people who came here and moved to a higher level in the government, when time came to acquire equipment, you'd see a large number of the green John Deere tractors crawling around the fields in South Africa and also in China. So again, you cannot underestimate the value of relationships and legacy relationships. As I said before, there is a lot of value placed on history in China, and certainly among some of the people that we interact with, the senior people, they do have a transferal capacity to have influence with people across different strata, especially in the Communist Party of China. So let me back up and say one of the things that's important. In our Asian Affairs Center, we provide training for mid-level executives from the provincial level and also from cities and municipalities in Korea and China. Now, those executives return home and very rapidly ascend to senior positions in the province, and they do have some amount of influence as it relates to children, parents deciding to send their children to America to school, and certainly University of Missouri. And they also wield, because of their connection, some authority regarding what that province purchases and also the kinds of business arrangement that they get into. We just happened to recognize that a few years ago, and I use the example of you having a corn crop in the field and you walk away and you don't harvest it, meaning the relationships that are there have not been looked at from the perspective of helping the state of Missouri and helping Missouri businesses before, because those relationships, some are 150 years old, but we were doing something else. We were exchanging students. But remember, you have to look at a dual or triple purpose of everything you do. And that is what undergirds what we are focusing on now.
Well, let's carry that metaphor out a little bit. So if Missouri wanted to harvest that crop of potential in terms of those relationships, what would that look like? What would be done differently, or what would be done more than what's being done now if to fully realize the potential of that?
Good question. And yes. Wen, I want to jump in too. I'll let you go.
Yeah, please.
Well, that's a very good question. Compared with other states, Missouri State started to have a strong business relationship with China a little bit later. Like in 1989, China was the third, fifth export market for the U.S. For our state of Missouri. And we actually, just like Dr. Williamson mentioned, we already had a lot of legacies and link there. We didn't use them. So kind of like compared with Minnesota, compared with Iowa, Montana, we are a little bit late. And however, in recent years, since 2012, 2003, it's kind of like the relationship started to grow much faster than our neighboring state.
And what changed? What did people start doing differently here in those years that turned that speed?
Well, here is my thinking. First of all, at the beginning, from 1978, to 1995, during that 15 years or 20 years, most scholars, students, even people travel, they just focus on East Coast and Western Coast. They don't know Middle West. They don't know Missouri. And gradually, and more Chinese middle classes occurred, and they send their children to the U.S., however, not every family can pay their tuition fee, their living fee, and people started to find that they can come to the United States to study, and also they can afford those tuition fees. And gradually, their eyes started to search in the Middle West because the living fee is much lower than West Coast and East Coast. That's kind of like the, because we started to have, let students to go to undergraduates, it's kind of like around 2000 years or 2002. So kind of those students and the families, parents, started to know Missouri. Mm-hmm. And once they have children here and some business, they think, I want to go to see my children. And probably they want to build a relationship with Missouri, and they can get more chances to come to here.
But what you're describing sounds sort of like luck on Missouri's part, right? Trends going on in China fueled more people coming here. Are there things that people in Missouri could or should be doing to take advantage of that history now?
Well, let me jump in on that. I think so. We can do more of what Mizzou has been doing, that is inviting people in, treating them with respect, and realizing that that encounter now can lead to greater things in the future. One of the things that I've noticed in talking to the Chinese counterparts and those in other countries that Missouri and Columbia are seen as safe places for, as a safe place for the children. These are middle-class parents who can afford to pay the tuition that we charge, and because of that safety factor, they want them to come here. And many of them will come and visit themselves. So part of it is what attracted me to the University of Missouri in 1969. I saw it as a special place, and I see it as a special place. Now, to get back to another thing you asked, what does it look like in terms of Missouri's interface or relationship? I can explain it this way. It looks like the efforts of some of our wiser and senior politicians. Governor Nixon invited us to carry him to our Confucius Institute partner in Shanghai Normal University, in addition to joining his trade mission, and we were delighted to do so. Former Governor Bob Holding, who established the Midwest China Association, has approached us, and we have facilitated his visits to China. And as a matter of fact, I let the governor borrow my book, written by Edgar Snow, as well as his wife, which he hasn't returned yet.
We're unfortunately going to have to stop there. That's a great place for us to stop of that connection. I'd like to thank all of our guests for joining us today. First, Tony Clayton, president of Clayton Agri-Marketing. Wen Ouyang, co-director of the Confucius Institute at the University of Missouri. Handy Williamson, the vice provost of international programs at MU. And Rosemary Gallant, the principal commercial officer at the U.S. Embassy in Beijing. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of our program, participate in an online chat, and submit your questions and comments. Just go to Intersection to kbia.org and follow the link for Intersection. You'll also find video of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar. Travis McMillan is our studio director, with production assistance from Danny Madison. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Ruben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.